Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today, we're speaking to Stephen Crompton about his audacious attempt to run across Africa.
Blimey. Whoa, what a journey. But before we get into that, Rick, how are you?
Well, not quite as impressive as Stephen's running this, but I have taken part in the 2.6 challenge that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, and that a lot of people are doing, which is kind of in place of big events like the London Marathon and an attempt to use some of the figures around the events, so 2 and 6, to set up your own challenges. So I roped in a couple of mates and I ran 1/3 of a sub-3 marathon. So that's 8.73 miles in under an hour. I'll tell you what, mate, it's not easy.
that's going some.
Yeah, it was like, because I was thinking, okay, well, like, you know, an hour at whatever your marathon pace is, okay, that's a kind of toughish ask. But there was the middle miles, I was a bit like, oh god, am I
going to do this?
Yeah, I might have to let the others down here.
Hold on, hasn't your 3/4 of the women's world records not been seeing you doing, you know, speedy stuff? I'm sure that's seen you in good stead.
It has been quicker stuff, but over a very short distance.
So kind of,
yeah, 400 meters, 800 meters. So I put the female world records on hold for a week to concentrate on this sub-3 marathon. But yeah, it was good actually. It was a way of, I guess, kind of creating a bit of a running club community without having to.
The relay aspect of it's quite nice because it means that as much as it's done sort of as in a light-hearted, let's see what we can do way, the moment you add a bit of like, I've got to do this because other people are doing it with me. That's quite a nice motivator to sort of have a bit of a push. Yeah, yeah.
Particularly if you come up with the idea, you know, if you kind of broke in 2 weeks and then you just sort of sack it off after like 5 miles.
Sorry, lads. Yeah, sorry, guys. Couldn't be asked. Yeah.
How are you, Ben?
I'm fine, mate. I was just going to say that's very good. And we've had actually a lot of emails from other people taking part in the 2.6 challenge. We had an email from Chloe Duttinger, I'm going to say.
Let's go with that.
We can say it anyways. Who said she particularly enjoyed last week's episode about the 2.6 challenge and thought she would share her challenge with us. So they've put together a team of 26 people who are aiming to each do 262 burpees every day for 26 days. And that started on Sunday the 26th. So that will be an amount of 6,812 burpees per person and a whopping 177,112 burpees overall.
Wow.
That's disgusting. So they're doing it to support their friend Juliet, who has cystic fibrosis. She falls into the category of a vulnerable person during lockdown. So her and her husband have been in their flat for the last 6 weeks with no visibility on when they'll be allowed to go outside. So it's a really nice thing that they're doing, and they're going to split the money between the Cystic Fibrosis Trust and the Royal Brompton Hospital. And I think that many burpees is a fine challenge.
262 every day. I mean, they're a great exercise, aren't they, I guess, but even doing 50, you know about it, don't you?
Oh god, yeah.
262 a day.
Oh yes, I mean it's pretty impressive. And she says Keep up the great work on the podcast, so thank you very much for that. Good luck to Ben with his continuing injury recovery, so thanks for that. And to Rick for his three-quarter female records challenges. So that nice email. And on, you know, everyone is dying to know about the injury. I'm actually doing all right. But I just thought I'd update something with maybe perhaps a new regular segment to the podcast, which is things I've learnt whilst in lockdown.
Okay. Yeah, lovely.
Thanks very much. And what I have noticed is not being in an office and not walking around all day in shoes, is that I've been stomping around in my bare feet a bit more. And I think, I know, that this is having some much-needed foot-strengthening work done, which I think is a big benefit of lockdown, you know, getting the old toes out and giving them a bit of work. We don't have any carpet in our house, so, you know, it's hard floors, so I feel like that's good. That's got to be good for the feet. I have noticed how dirty the floors are, though, which is a bit off-putting.
That's the downside, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, it's been good, actually, to sort of walk around without... I mean, you do it in the office and you just receive scorn. So it's quite nice to do it in the house and sort of feel like that's a bit of an extra push. But the injury is going well, thank you, in terms of recovery and stuff.
That's good.
Well, you know...
But I think you've got an interesting point about kind of conditioning stuff, and it could be, you know, for your feet or... If you're like me, I've got a few kind of DIY strength and conditioning stuff knocking around the house. I actually found that I've probably been doing more kind of kettlebell kind of that kind of thing during lockdown than I would, you know, having to go out to the gym or whatever, you know?
I think this is it. There's a bit of a risk that you end up doing too much because, you know, like the classic challenge of someone puts a chin-up bar in the doorway, right? And they want every time they go through the door, they've got to do 10. That's all well and good if you're in the house in the morning and then you go to work and then you come back and you do something. If you put it in the bathroom and you're in the house all day, you end up doing like 500 pull-ups and you either get really strong or you just like dislocate your shoulder. So I think it's the same thing with like the little things. They're kind of like you want to allow your body to sort of adapt to these sort of changes and not overload. Because we know we've been talking about doing more strength and conditioning at home and you absolutely should. This is the chance to do it. But I think when we had Brad on, the physio, a couple of weeks ago, he was talking about strength and conditioning stuff. It's twice a week. You know, if you're doing a proper strength and conditioning session, you need to be doing it twice a week. You don't need to be doing a daily strength and conditioning stuff.
Mm.
You can do some prehab, like get the resistance bands out, do some sort of engagements and firing up of the muscles and all those sorts of things. Mm. But I think that, as you say, like every single day, if you sort of like stumble across your kettlebell and you start doing like 20 reps of something straight away, you're probably just going to create more issues. So I think it's
I think that's true.
When I talk about building the strength in my feet, I'm literally talking about walking around barefoot and like and like, you know, maybe standing on one leg now and again while I'm doing some work or those sorts of things. But it's been good. I think you know, the feet feel good for it.
Hey, I tell you what, should we do some pseudoscience, Ben?
Love pseudoscience. Let's do it.
Well, do you want to do the top one, and I'll do the training one underneath it.
All right. Well, here's some delicious pseudoscience for you, Rick.
Oh, good.
Don't be surprised if running feels harder during stressful times.
Okay.
So the fact is, if you're at home, you've got to wash your hands all the time. You're isolated from your friends. There's the risk of everyone and your loved ones becoming dangerously ill. That's stress. And these past few months have been enough to move a Zen Buddhist to distraction. So if you found that your running has struggled, there's a reason behind this, and there's a new study, and we like studies. It's in the Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, and they found that just 45 minutes of stress can impair subsequent running performance. So if you say, like, you know, we wake up and we're probably quite stressed all day long, it's going to take its toll on everyone's running. The study had participants perform either a mentally fatiguing computer task or a relaxing documentary, followed by a time-to-exhaustion test on a treadmill. And the results were that following the mentally fatiguing task, the times were reduced by an average of 6% in women and 3% in men. So there you go, stress. So if you're out there, you know, you've been in isolation, you're worried about everyone and your loved ones and the family and yourself, and you're finding that running is your great release, but performance isn't improving.
Mm.
Might be something to do with the incredibly stressful world that we're all living in.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think we can fall into the mistake, can't we, of really separating like mind and body and thinking that, you know, you can you can kind of neglect one, or you can neglect your mental health and still run well. And actually, that they're really kind of inextricably connected, those two. And I'm sure there are other studies that would prove,
the same. Yeah, it's because it's really tough, because things like stress and all the other sleep, everything kind of gets shoehorned into fatigue, and it's kind of such a broad, you get mental fatigue and physical fatigue, and it's actually, I think, it's one of those things that people don't often consider too much about. It's just running. That's my heart and my lungs and my legs, and that's all that needs to be good for me to do this well. But actually being stressed out 100% will make a big difference.
Definitely. Tell you what, we've been around the block a bit, Ben, haven't we? We've been in this game a while, and we've heard about stuff like hill training and threshold and tempo, and we get it.
Yeah.
A term comes up that, for me at least, was kind of new, and I thought, wow, what is that? And it's an upcoming feature in Runner's World on a group called the Tin Man Elite,
which is
a terrible name for a running club, but they're very quick, so fair play to them. And they do a lot of critical velocity training, or if you're in the know, it's CV training.
Oh my goodness.
I've never heard of this. It's all explained in the feature. It's basically 90% of your VO2 max. If you're like me, that doesn't really mean much to you. So in layman's terms, it's basically a few seconds per mile faster than your 10K pace.
Okay. So, a lot of people probably have watches these days that beep at them and tell them their VO2 max at the end of each run. So that's quite a good, a bad little metric to sort of think about. Yeah.
So this group called Tin Man Elite, and they do a lot of running at critical velocity in their schedules. And they think it's the kind of secret sauce to fast racing time. So here is a session, Ben, that uses CV running. So it's basically 5 times a kilometre at CV pace.
Okay.
So just inside 10K pace with 200 metre jog recoveries.
Okay.
And then you do some quicker stuff at the end. You do 5 times 200 metres, starting at 5K race effort and ending at 800 metre race effort with 100 metre jog recoveries in between. So that's quite tough, actually, that. But I quite like the idea of exploring this CV training. It may be that lots of listeners are more familiar with that term and are already doing a lot of it, but it seems to be, it sort of hits a sweet spot between intensity, but without battering yourself. Yeah. So I think a lot of people do a lot of training at 5K pace, and that can be quite brutal, or even like mile pace. But this seems to be just slightly off it. It's going to be tough, but it's kind of controlled.
Sounds like quite like sort of like, it's quite athletics driven, that one. It sounds quite like a sort of like a, those who visit the track probably do quite a lot of that. They might not call it that. They might not call it critical velocity. They might just call it normal fast running. But that sounds good. I'm glad that I've learned. Yeah, every day's a school day here, Rick. So that's good. That's good to pick
up. If you're doing CV running, as we all are now, Ben, you're looking at kind of 1K reps. It's that kind of distance you want to go for, maybe about 5 of them, or you could work your way up. You learn something new, like you say.
Fantastic.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, well, we should probably get our guest of the week on.
Let's do it. I think this podcast, Ben, should be about, in part, about escapism, along with the kind of interesting stuff about, you know, CV running and all the rest of it. And in sort of hearing inspiring tales of daring do by people. And you remember Stephen Crompton, who came on the podcast probably a couple of months ago now. And, oh no, actually at least a couple of months ago. And he had an amazing story about, he was in the army. He got thrown out of the army. Then he lost himself a bit to various addictions, ended up on the street for a short period of time. But found running and just like sorted his life out. Amazing sort of mental strength and became a very, very good ultra runner. And before we talked to him, he was going off and it had all been building to this great challenge, which was his race across Africa.
I mean, it was one of those guests that you sort of, you read the preamble when you sort of, you sort of hear about someone and you sort of want to chat to them. So we get them in kind of like, oh, this, maybe it's an interesting tale. And his frankness at which he spoke on his troubles in life was one of those moments when you go, good, wow. Like there's sort of, you have to step outside your own sort of parameters of, you know, oh, you know, this is a bit tough, or, oh, I didn't, you know, that bit of life. And this guy, wow, he was just blew me away in terms of like the struggles that he'd had to go through. Yeah, he was sort of sat in front of us explaining what he wanted to go and do next.
I agree, mate. You know, it puts into perspective like your own struggles. So you think if anyone is prepared to go and race across Africa, it's someone like Stephen Crompton. He's also attempting to raise thousands of pounds for a charity he founded called Challenge Child Poverty, which is about supporting underprivileged kids in Africa. So he's well trained, mentally tough, and he goes over there. All I'm going to say, Ben, is that he had to try and run 30 miles a day in 30 degree heat. And I would say that was probably the easiest part about this challenge I've spoken to him. But yeah, it's a really good tale. And it's a good story about pressing on, I think, against kind of mounting odds. And that's very much what he kind of represents, I think, as a person and a runner. So hopefully you enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you spoke to him on your own on this one, so I'm very much looking forward to catching up on this. But I have had a few spoilers off you, and it's a very, very funny story. So it's good. It's good stuff. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
So could you tell us, Steve, like, you arrive, right? You arrive in Dar es Salaam, right? Tanzania, the East Coast. Like, tell us about the kind of the first few days and the first week and some of the challenges that sort of sprung up almost from the offset.
So I remember when I landed, the heat and humidity hit me straight away. And I couldn't even sleep in the room. I didn't sleep the night I landed. I couldn't sleep in the room. It was that hot. And I just knew this was going to be a lot harder than I had even imagined. I got out for my first 3 mile run the next day. And I ran down the beach from the hotel where we were staying. And I did 3 miles. And I literally thought I was going to die. I couldn't breathe. I had to run into the nearest restaurant and get like some water, and I was tipping salt in it and eating pancakes, and I'd only done 3 miles. And I'm thinking in my head, well, I've set myself a task to run 35 miles a day across Africa. And at that point I was questioning whether I could actually do this or not.
Yeah.
You know, as the days went on, it started to go 3 miles, you know, up to five, and got in a few 8 milers and a 10 miler, and, you know, started to feel a little bit better, but still struggling a lot at, you know, the low mileage. So, nonetheless, we only had a week. I only gave myself a week to prepare. And then, on the 17th of January, we set off from Cocoa Beach, and, I wasn't completely acclimatized, so I thought I'm going to keep it down to about 20 miles a day to begin with.
Right.
Just not to just kill myself in the first week, you know. And so, yeah, we set off from Cocoa Beach. It was a beautiful morning, absolutely lovely morning. And we did 18 miles that day. And I remember it was about 33 degrees and 100% humidity.
Wow.
Coming out of Dar es Salaam. And I was completely broken that first day. It was 18 miles. I remember running, you know, along the busy roads. And as you just got out of Dar es Salaam, we hit these... they were doing the road and we had to run on just at the sides of this new tarmac road that was being laid. And it was the heat coming off of it was,
yeah
absolutely exhausting. It was really, it made it hard, really hard. But we finished that first day and managed to get somewhere, set a tent up and had a rest, got up and you slowly start getting into it. But it was, you know, we were keeping it between 20 and, I think the most we did was 37 miles in that first week, but did about 140 miles in week one.
And, wow.
On day seven, I hit an injury. I'd done 29 miles and my ankle had swollen up and my shin was hurting quite a lot, quite a lot of pain. And we just got to this camp and I was worried at this stage. I didn't think that how it felt and how it looked. I thought that was the end of the run across Africa, and it was quite worrying and disappointing. So I decided we'd just take 2 days rest here at the camp where we had just reached, and just see if it would go down. And during them 2 days, I had managed to. Do a bit of strength training. I didn't know actually what the injury was, but we just made some presumptions, spoke to a physio back in England, and you know, there were some things that could be bad news and some things that couldn't be bad news, but it's hard to tell what it was. So I just did some strength training and went with what I thought it might be, and did a bit of conditioning, just 2 days rest, and then the next day in my head, I'd sat there and I kind of put far too much into this. There's no way I'm giving up now. I'm still in a lot of pain. I can't.
Yeah.
I haven't got 2 weeks to rest. And another couple of days isn't going to make a huge difference if it is bad injury. So I decided to just start going, get going again and run through the pain. And it was... we were just coming up to our first national park, then Mukumi National Park.
Right.
And I was really gutted because we'd stopped just before the first national park, and it was something I was really looking forward to, running through a national park. So getting that injury just before was gutting. But I said, there's no way I'm stopping now. We're going to run through the national park and we'll see how we get on. And I just kept running through the pain. It must have been about a week of quite excruciating pain. And then it just, all of a sudden, it just sort of disappeared, just went away.
It's amazing that, isn't it, like how maybe in some ways that you decide that there is no exit of this, and actually on some level your body just kind of gets on board. Strange how that can happen.
Your body's like telling you there's pain in that area for a reason, but if you defy it, I guess it has to find a way to deal with it. You know, it's just a signal between your mind and your body, right? And if you're defying giving up, even with the pain, then your body's got to try and adapt, I guess.
I'm interested in your support team, Steve. Like, you didn't do it on your own, did you? You had a small team of people helping you out. What was the setup?
So we had Anna supporting us on the bike. So she would cycle nearby with like the water and first aid kit and stuff like that. But obviously, running through the national park, we had to put the bike on top, and Anna joined us for a run now and again. But we would have the support vehicle right next to me running through the national park, just so I could jump in if there was any lions coming up or what's going on. And we had the driver and the cook in the support vehicle.
Right. So how easy was it to... Because what was the next country, and how easy was it to move between countries when you were doing this?
So I'd never done anything like this before, and we got up to the first border, Tunduma. That was absolute my worst nightmare. I had ran 31 miles up to the border this day.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm tired. Get to the border, it's at night time as well, and we're just surrounded by about 100 people with wads of cash and agents, and you've got to pay this, you've got to pay this. It was, yeah, after 31 miles, you can imagine you're tired, hungry, and then you just chaos around you. It's just like, it was a nightmare. But we just drove through this big crowd of people, got into the office, and I said, I want to speak to somebody who's in charge here. This is just madness. Like, what's going on? And we couldn't get any sense. But what we did find out, which was an absolute nightmare, was that Blandina, our cook, was not going to be able to travel because her documents were out of date.
Oh, right.
So that was a massive blow. And I was tired, worn out, and I said, right, let's go and find somewhere on this side, leap, we'll come back in the morning. I then had to figure out what I was going to do without a cook, how we were going to manage without that. Right. So the next day we had to get Blandina to the bus station to get her back to Moshi in Tanzania, and we had to proceed. I said in my head, there's no way I can give up, put a year of my life into planning this, we're going to have to proceed. I'm going to have to find a new cook that's going to meet us in Zambia. We'll struggle for a few days, but we'll keep going. And got up the next morning, we got to the border, and it was stressful enough because we just lost Blandina, but then it became even more of a nightmare because we're doing all the processing and stuff, and you have to get the car processed, and obviously they have to do checks and stuff to make sure that it's all in order. And I'm sat in the vehicle, the driver, Rashid, he's sorting all that out. I'm just sat outside, just sort of trying to figure out how I'm going to get a cook in Zambia. And he comes out with the person dealing with the car at the time, and says, we've got a problem here, guys. And I says, oh, not another problem. That I didn't even check all this. You know, this is my first sort of big challenge, such, doing something like this. So there was a lot of things where I messed up, and never even thought to look at the logbook. I just thought it would all be in order, you know. Mm. Hey, he brings the logbook out. He says the engine number's different. It's wrong. The it says it's a diesel transmission when it's a petrol, and it says it's a white car and it's clearly blue. I'm like, oh no. At that stage, I was just like, that's the end, isn't it? I just didn't think we were going to be able to get through that. But with some gentle persuasion, we managed to...
to get into Zambia.
We managed to get into Zambia, yeah. Which was a massive, massive relief. There were some fees to pay, but I didn't care at that stage. I just wanted to get into Zambia and keep going. It was a good day as well. Our first day in Zambia, we got 40 miles in on day one of Zambia, and it's a great way to start in the next country, you know, and get things flying. Camping was good. We were being able to camp. Just pay somebody like a couple of quid here and there to camp in their gardens. It was tough for the first few days because our support cyclist Anna had to do a bit of the support cyclist and do a bit of the cooking as well. So it was quite a strain on her and the whole team. Actually, we did have a few arguments just through being tired and stuff in the first few days in Zambia. But we managed to get a really good thing in place where we just take it in turns, and we were really smashing out the big days in Zambia. We did 40 miles, and you know, we weren't dropping below 35 miles a day because we were being able to camp where we stopped, and it wasn't taking hours to figure out where we were camping, you know, like in Tanzania that was quite hard. About a week into Zambia, we'd heard about a bit of a political unrest going on, and there was this story going around that was spread on social media that there was a group of people gassing people and taking blood out of them for some political sort of reason to strike fear into people. And anyway, this caused a lot of issues for us then, because from that point onwards, we couldn't just camp in people's gardens. We had a big bottle of gas in the back of the tent, in the back of the car. That people generally thought we were the people going around gassing people. So this story had spread to, you know, the villages and the towns, and we'd obviously this was the first thing we'd realised about the political unrest and stuff and the stories that were going around. And I was getting quite tired by this stage. We'd done 224 miles in the first week of Zambia, and I thought, right, we were coming up to a place called Shiwa Ngandu. And I thought, well, it's a really nice hot springs, and we'll have a half a day's rest there just to get regroup, and also I had arranged a new cook to join us.
Oh, great.
I'd been given a contact for a woman in Livingston that had sent us one of her cooks that we were going to pay to work for us for the duration through Zambia, which was amazing because at 1 week, you know, we were struggling. So I said, we'll have a half a day rest at Shiwangandu Hot Springs, which was amazing. The guy there, Mark Harvey, gave us a lot of contacts and they also treated us to a massage in the massage parlour there and stuff. A proper massage. Yeah, like actual proper massage this time. And yeah, it was really, really incredible. We had half a day's rest and then we were meeting our new cook, Brian, at the end of the road leading off on back onto the main road, onto the T2 from Shiwangandu. And we had half a day's rest the next morning and then we were meeting him at 2 o'clock at the end of this road. And about 6 miles down the road from Shiwangandu, we broke down. And I'm there just sat next to the car. There's just so many problems. Like every week there's something where I think it's going to be the end of the run. Because if it's a really costly thing, I'm not going to be able to carry on, right? It's with a tight budget and stuff. So it took us about 4 hours. We managed to get Mark Harvey, managed to get hold of him. And he sent one of his mechanics. And they managed to take out the stabilizers and get us back on our way. But in this time, our cook, who we'd not met yet, Brian, had been waiting for 4 or 5 hours for us at the end of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we spoke about the political unrest. Well, you know, the police had seen him hanging around with his bag at the end of this road and the locals had reported him. And so he had been arrested by the time he got down there.
As a sort of suspected gasser. Yeah.
So he's been arrested on suspected gasser, but also to protect him, you know, so people have suspicion about who he is and stuff like that. So we managed to speak to the police and he got brought back to where we were setting off from. And they realized what he was doing and stuff, they let him go. But it was one way to meet him.
It's just amazing. Like it's so much more than the run, this.
Yeah,
Steve, isn't it? It's like that's almost the least of your concerns is running 35 miles a day.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing, right? It was there were so many things coming up that were challenging me more than the running, which you'll see it sort of after a while it sort of grinds you down a bit. But by the time we had met Brian, it was too late to start running again that day. Decided to just literally at the end of that road there was a little very low budget sort of B&B. We got a room there for the night and regrouped, and that gave us time to chat as a team and go through how we're operating and stuff like that. Then the next day, after having that rest day and stuff, half a day rest day and massage, I felt in good shape. So we hit 54 miles that next day, which was great.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah, and sort of, because that's where I want to start work up to, is about 40-45, and we hit 54 that day, which was great. Did 40 the next and was really flying. 37 and a half the next after that. I think I felt like we were really getting into the stride of things. And it was day 37, just outside of Serenje, that the team, we ran out of gas. So the team that morning had gone to fill up the gas bottle whilst I ran the first checkpoint, which was 15 miles to the first checkpoint. So I'd put it in on Google Maps, mark the checkpoint for our driver, and then I'd set off and I'd meet them there. It was the last 2 miles of my run of that morning checkpoint. They were still trying. They just rang me like not long before, saying we're having to wait for the manager to come back with some fittings for the gas bottle. And I was running along, and all of a sudden I heard this like quite a lot of commotion and like shouting and screaming going on in the background. I had my headphones in, but I always kept the music down enough so I could sort of hear what's going on around me. And I look behind me and I just see like kids and then women running after me. I'm used to kids running after me. That happens all the time. I didn't think too much of it first sight, but it got louder and louder, and I'm looking behind me and it's like a lot of people screaming, shouting now, and they don't look very happy. And I'm like, oh God, what's going on here? And then a minute later, there's a group of people up front and they're screaming at them. And I just see them darting around like to make their move into the road. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Yeah. I'm starting to get a bit worried. And as I'm running up, this guy runs into the middle of the road, stops me, like grabs me and sort of pulls me to the side of the road. Got all these people stood around me screaming and shouting, like, and I don't know what they're saying, but all I know is that I'm quite terrified at this stage. My legs are shaking a bit, but I'm just trying to stay calm because I've not done anything wrong here. And he started questioning me, like, where are you coming from, what are you doing? So I got my phone out and just showed them some videos and photos of the Run Across Africa and the charity, what we're doing. Thankfully, he spoke some English. That was, he understood. Yeah. That was, and basically someone had alerted these people, say that there was potential gas running through the village or something, you know, and they wow. they thought that I might be, you know, one of these people that have been going around gassing people. So that was a really scary moment for me. I'd never been in a, you know, I was, my support team are 15 miles away. I'm in the middle of this like village in the middle of Zambia. I'm hundreds of miles from a major city. Really scary. But they let me go after about 10 minutes of questioning me, and some guy there was getting shouted at and really told off. Obviously someone had said something that was a bit out of order, but so I carried on running, and I'm just like glad to be alive at this stage. Yeah. I got to the checkpoint, just sort of sat down and was like trying to process what had just gone on. The next few days were tough. It had a bit of an effect on my mind, because now that I feel like a suspect running through Zambia, and it was driving me into the ground a bit. A couple of days later, we had got to we were coming up to a place called Fringilla Farm that we'd been given a contact for by Mark Harvey at Shiwa Ngandu. At this stage, I was quite worn out and tired because of what had been going on the last few days, and looking forward to a rest day. We were going to have a rest day there, and we literally, towards the end of the day, I think I'd ran 33 miles, and we'd stopped. I decided to call it a day, and as we went to drive away with a support vehicle to get to this farm so we could eat and get some rest, the car broke down again. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't. The amount of stress and pressure I've been under. But you just have to try and stay positive and really keep just stay hungry and positive and motivated, because all these things, they're trying to drag you down, and actually you can get stressed about them, or you can just accept them and go, right, what's the solution? How are we going to get over this? Rather than worrying about the costs, you know, and the time and everything. You just got to try and think about how you're going to get over it and think about a solution and moving forward. And that eliminates the stress, because if you start worrying about everything else, it starts driving you a bit mad. But it was amazing when we got to Fringilla. Andrew Woodley had this massive buffet dinner on for us, and with pudding, which was like cake and custard, and he gave us a couple of lodges to sleep in. He really looked after us well, so that was good. The people in Zambia were amazing, to be honest. They looked after us really well. From Shiwa and Gandu, Mark Harvey gave us some contacts, and along the way, people were really looking after us.
Oh, that's great. So, what was the next stop, Steve, after Zambia? What was the next border?
Well, Zambia, as we worked through Zambia, we got to the next border was Sesheke, which was Winela border post going into Namibia.
Okay, right.
But we got to a town called Lusaka just before that. And I had been told that Ugandan nationals can get through the border into Namibia without a visa. They can get it on entry, and it says it online as well, actually. And in Lusaka, I'd been told that our driver at the embassy, we'd been told that he has to go back to Tanzania, where we started in Dar es Salaam, to get his visa. And I nearly had a heart attack. I couldn't really take it, because anyway, cut a long story short, we had to pay £500 or something to get him back to Tanzania to get this visa, whilst I paid another driver to take us forward, and we had to get a police to write a document. Cost us a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of stress.
Yeah.
We got to the border after about a week of him travelling back to Tanzania and then meeting us just after Livingston. And we got to the border that morning, and he was refused entry, and they said that he had to go back to Lusaka to get this. And the Namibian consulate in Lusaka really treat us like criminals and wasn't willing to help us, but we were told at the border that's where he was meant to help us out with the with the visa, and it cost us so much money and time. I was ready to give up at that stage, because there was a lot of problems. We were having to pay a lot of money out that I just didn't expect, and I was ready to give up once he'd I put a post out saying that was it, that was the end of the run across Africa.
Right.
I was broken completely. I was heartbroken, actually, because it cost so much time and money. We got away from there because I was going mad with the consulate, and I probably would have got arrested at the border post there because I was so unhappy with what had happened.
Yeah.
And that they couldn't help us after the Namibian consulate had really messed us up there. But we went away. We had some food, and I decided, you know, no way, there's no way I'm going to give up. What's the solution to this? We're going to have to find a solution. And so I spoke to another guy, got another driver in, sent Rashid home, had to pay for him to go back to Uganda whilst we pay for another driver to take us the next leg of the trip. And eventually we got into Namibia, and, you know, that was a massive relief, got into Namibia. And we faced quite a challenging section, which was the Caprivi Strip, a 200-kilometer stretch of national parks.
Right.
Yeah, that was quite a challenging section.
From what perspective? Like the terrain, or?
I think I was so worn out mentally. I was really worn out by that stage. It was quite challenging because actually the coronavirus had hit by the time we hit Namibia. I thought we finally got through the psychological effects of the political unrest in Zambia, and we got to Namibia, and I thought, you know, it's gonna take a lot of the pressure off. But actually the coronavirus had just started to spread. The news of it had started to spread in Namibia. People were shouting corona at me as I was running by, and no one wanted to let us camp where we had stopped and stuff. So it was very challenging, and it was starting to really have a bit of an effect on me.
I guess if you start to feel like it's becoming hostile, I guess, and kind of you can understand it, can't you, from people are scared and they think that this is a disease that hasn't originated in Africa and stuff. But it's sort of the last thing that after this kind of journey that you've had, Steve, you're due a little bit of luck, aren't you, at that point?
Yeah.
And then it's like one of the worst epidemics that's ever happened in the world sort of takes root.
Yeah, it was really, really tough. It really had a bad effect on me, and but I understand what was, you know, I didn't really understand at the time what was going on, but I soon had to get up to date with it. I spoke to the the UK Crime Commissioner in Namibia. She was going to be doing a run with us in Namibia, and I managed to get a direct contact. Spoke to her and asked what was going on and stuff, and she filled me in on what was or wasn't going on. And I carried on running for a couple of days, but I found myself on, I think it was the 22nd of March or 23rd, I ran about 18 miles that day, and it got too much for me. And I knew that within a couple of days Namibia was going to be closing their borders, and I was going to be ducking in the desert potentially with a team of guys that I had to pay with a very, very limited budget that was already broken. Too much, you know, I had to get the team home safely. They got families in Zambia. I didn't know how this was going to escalate, whether I was going to be stuck and whether the team were going to be safe. So I remember I was running 18 miles, and I just broke down crying as I was running. It was like I couldn't, everything had just weighed me down. I really wanted to finish this, you know. I put a year of my life into the campaign, and you know, a lot of money to try and raise 75k for Amari, Uganda, And it really got me down, and I decided to call it that night, call it off, and get the guys home safe.
It's the right decision, Steve, isn't it? I mean, I think that's the mature decision, even like you say, once you've invested so much time and so much money at that point. But yeah, to see the actual true priorities of like getting your team back. So in the end, Steve, how close did you get to kind of running across Africa? You'd done a lot more than half of it, hadn't you? Or...
I'd done three quarters of it. I'd done 1,800 miles, and I had 600 in front of me, and we were just about to enter the beautiful desert sort of area of Namibia.
Yeah.
I'd done 68 marathons in 66 days, but we had a lot of hold-ups, so it's actually a bit more impressive than that.
It's remarkable that you got as far as you did. I guess what was it? Was it one country remaining? Would it be Angola after that, or?
No. From Namibia straight through the desert to the west coast to Hentje Bay.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Hentje Bay. It was we were in the final country, and I was on the home straight. It was tough. It was tough, and for two or three days I felt really down about it. Mm. I was questioning why I'm doing it and what I was doing it for, and it was a real moment where I grew a lot from the whole challenge is when I decided to switch my mindset to how I was going to make this ending work for me and how I was going to defy the ending. And in my head, I said, I'm just going to come back and we're going to start again and we're going to smash it.
As in, when you say that, have you got ambitions to try to do it again or to try to do a different challenge?
Well, I've had 2 weeks of resting now, and I've been doing a bit of training and stuff. And I've just applied to the Guinness World Records, and we're going to go out and attempt to run the length of Africa. And try and beat the world record of 318 days.
Wow, that's incredible, Steve. Because I think a lot of people might have had the experience that you've had, amazing as I'm sure it was, but think, wow, there are easier continents to run through. Actually, my next challenge may be slightly less challenging than that. But yeah, you've gone the other way.
Yeah. I think for me, if I get defeated, I get back up stronger, and I want to go one better. I'm not taking a step back or doing the same thing. I think it's important to grow strong and go one better and learn from it. So I think after what I've learned from the run across Africa, I've learned enough to be able to do it. And I just think I can do it, and it'll be an even bigger campaign where we can try and at least definitely raise the money this time for the project and stuff. So,
well, I think it sounds amazing. If people want to find out a bit more about the run that you've just done, though, is there's a website, isn't there, that has some of the information on it and the donating in it, etc.
Yeah. There's challengechildpoverty.org.uk. Under Run Across Africa, there's there's blog posts of there's a blog write up for every day that we were out there, and the link and everything is on there, and get involved, read the story. We've also got a running event coming up next June, Conquer 24, 24-hour running event around Powderham Castle in Exeter.
Great.
So it's a great way to get involved.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to getting you back on the podcast, Steve, in the run-up to the Length of Africa challenge. And if it's half as good a story as the run across Africa, it's going to be a treat. Absolutely amazing, amazing adventure, I think. And really remarkable that you got as far as you did and that you didn't throw in the towel earlier, because I think a lot of people would have, seen those challenges and thought the whole thing was just a bit undoable, really. But it's credit to you that you pressed on with it. And then obviously it was taken out of your hands at the end, I think.
I think it's a great thing. I mean, all these challenges, I'm very grateful for every challenge that we had throughout the run across Africa, because it's the challenges that where you get the growth, and they're the parts you remember. So you got to appreciate the challenges. If it was easy, it just wouldn't be as rewarding. So and the way it's ended has only made me stronger and made me have that desire to go back and go one stronger and one better. So I'm grateful for the way things have turned out. You know, it's important to keep that gratitude and hunger to keep going and never give up. You know, like if you've got a goal, I had a goal to run across Africa, didn't quite work out this time, but we just go one better, you know. And
that'd be absolutely phenomenal. Steve, thank you so much for telling the story about the run across Africa, and very, very best of luck with your next challenge.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on, Rick.
Pleasure. All right, thank you, Steve. Thanks very much, mate.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So there you have it, Ben. Are you going to be racing across Africa next, do you think?
I don't think so.
Get back to me on that one. That brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Stephen Crompton, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, Spotify, and every other favourite podcast app that you can think of. Just search Runner's World UK. If you've enjoyed the episode, please do give us a review and remember to tune in next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.